We all cheered, and I think I never loved those boys more than at that moment. We'd saved her. We'd all done it together. Together wasn't something that Peter understood, not really. He liked all the boys to be in one group, but he didn't like sharing, and he certainly didn't like it when the boys banded together to do anything without him. He liked to sow discontent, to cause fights, and this, I realized, was why he never played at battle. It was much more fun for him to watch us run to and fro and hurt each other. If we hurt one another, even in fun, then we could never like one another best. Only him. On the sixth day, Sally sat up and scowled at me when I changed the poultice. "Must you put that foul-smelling stuff on there?" she said. "If you enjoy living, then yes," I said. "That foul stuff probably saved your life."
"I thought Crow said it was your magic broth that saved me," Sally said, her eyes twinkling.
It was nice to see that twinkle again, to know that Sal was almost back to normal. Nod, who was good at sewing, had made her a fresh pair of deerskin pants that stopped at the knee, and a matching shirt with silver wolf fur trimmed all around the edges. It was one of the finest things he'd ever made, and he'd presented it to her with a blushing face that morning. Sal had thanked him very prettily, her own cheeks pink, and then asked for some privacy so she could change into Nod's gift. She'd washed and changed while the four of us stood outside the tree, looking up at the sky and trying not to be curious about what was going on inside. When she called out that it was all right to come back in, she was wearing her new clothes and sitting up against the cave wall. There was something different about her, something I noticed after a few minutes. She'd stopped binding her chest, and now it was desperately obvious that she was, in fact, a girl. Crow and Charlie didn't seem to notice, but Nod looked everywhere except directly at Sal, and I tried to keep my eyes right on her face. "Something saved you. The broth, or the leaves, or just plain luck," I said, feeling the blood rise in my face as I glanced at her chest. I had to stop being so foolish. It was only Sal, my friend Sal, and truthfully the curves were so small that she barely looked different from a boy. But they were there. She was most definitely not a boy. Nod and Crow and Charlie were outside, and I heard them laughing as they played some game. It was good to hear Nod laugh, though it never quite reached his eyes. The ghost of fog lingered there.
"Jamie, do you remember your mother?" Sal asked.
I gave her a startled glance. "My mother? No."
"Sometimes you sing a little song to yourself when you're at some task, like you were doing just now," Sal said. "I thought you might have learned it from your mother."
I hadn't even known I was singing, and wondered if this happened often and the other boys just never thought to mention it to me. "I told you I came here a long time ago, Sal," I said, feeling unaccountably angry. "I don't remember my life before the island."
"Certain of that?" she asked.
"Yes. I told you so. Do you think I'm a liar?" She didn't flinch. She didn't seem even a little bit intimidated by my temper.
"I just wondered if you remembered, really. Didn't want to say because it would make Peter angry."
I started to say that I didn't care what Peter thought about it, that I did as I pleased. But that wasn't really true, was it? I didn't do as I pleased. I did what I thought was best and tried to keep Peter happy so he wouldn't destroy everything. I made myself a hostage to him for 3 weeks just so he wouldn't drag any more boys here to his island and to keep Charlie and Sal safe from his jealousy. I did remember some things from the other place. The song. Wide blue eyes staring, and a red mouth carved in a smile where there should be none. "I don't like to talk about it," I said.
I finished up changing the bandage and collected the dirty things to take outside to wash.
"You're a good father to these boys,"
Sal said.
"I thought maybe you learned from someone who cared about you."
"I'm not their father," I said, my voice harsh. "I don't think of myself that way. We're not playing families here on this island. We just work together."
"You look out for them. You take care of them. That's what a father does, or at least what he's supposed to do. Mine only beat me and my mother until I ran away. After that, he only had my mother to hit," Sal said.
She didn't sound sad about this, or like she wanted me to feel sorry for her. It was just a statement of fact, but it arrested my anger.
"Did you love your mother?" I asked curiously. "When I was small, I did," she said. "When I was older, I hated her for letting him hurt me."
"Maybe she was scared to try to make him stop."
I had a strange impulse to defend Sal's mother. "I wasn't scared," she said. "I shouted at him. I stood up to him. I hit him with a broken bottle once, made him bleed all over. If a little child can do that, then why couldn't my mother stand between us?"
I didn't know what to say to this. I could see it. Little Sal with her dark curls and blue eyes, fierce and small, with a bruise on her face and a jagged bottle in her hand.
"That's what you do for the boys," Sal continued. "You stand between them and Peter. You keep them safe. Because it isn't safe, this island. It isn't at all what Peter promised it would be, what I thought it would be."
"What did you think it would be?"
She shrugged, and her hands moved restlessly in her lap. "Like a paradise, I suppose. A happy place that was clean and bright, and where everyone was lovely to each other and there was lots and lots of food to eat. I've spent 3 years eating rats or mouldy bread that I stole off the end of a cart. If ever I had anything, a penny earned from shining shoes or an apple that wasn't half rotten, some bigger boy would come along and try to take it from me. I always had to fight, every day, just to stay alive. I was fighting when Peter found me, beating an older boy who wanted my cap."
"That's why he wanted you," I said. "If he saw you fighting and thought you were good at it, he would want you here."
"I thought," she said, and she took a deep breath. "I thought that Peter respected me because I wouldn't let the other boy bully me. He said I looked like a boy that deserved an adventure. I didn't believe him at first about the island, though."
"I didn't either," I said. "I don't know that anyone does. Sounds like a fantastic lie."
"It is a fantastic lie," Sal said, and her face was very earnest. "This isn't a wonderful place for boys to play and have adventures and stay young for always. It's a killing place, and we're all just soldiers in Peter's war."
I shuffled my feet, not sure what to say to this. It wasn't that I hadn't thought all of these things before, or even said some of them to Peter. I had. But I was his first choice, his best, his right hand. I couldn't, not yet anyway, say out loud to the other boys that Peter was a monster. "Wasn't always like this," I said. "With the pirates, I mean. We used to just raid them, but they never came looking for us after."
"And what changed?" Sal said, her eyes narrow and sharp. She knew the answer as well as I did.
"Isn't this place better than eating rats and getting beaten every day?" I shouted, suddenly angry again. "Do you want to go back to that? Because Peter will send you there. I was going to look out for you and say that he should let you stay, but if you don't like it here, then I should let you go back to that life." I stomped out of the tree, not waiting to hear what she answered. What did she know about the island or Peter anyway? She hadn't been here that long. She wasn't even a boy, even if she pretended to be one. Peter said there weren't to be any girls on the island. He made the rules and I ought to take her back to the other place myself. And while I was at it, I should take Charlie too.
He was learning to like it on the island. Too much. He'd never seemed so happy as when it was just the five of us. No Peter to growl at him. No Nip to scowl at him. His mother would be missing him. She would be crying every night. I ought to bring him home. Except that he was part of my heart now. And I didn't want to let him go. And I didn't want to let Sal go either. Did that make me selfish? Did that make me like Peter? Maybe it did. Just a little. But I had to believe that I was better than Peter. I wouldn't sacrifice the others for my own amusement. I wouldn't forget about them the moment they were gone. That made me better, didn't it? I only wanted them near me because I loved them. Though, of course, it was because I loved them that Peter had to take them from me. 9 days after the pirate assault on the mountain, Peter reappeared in camp. Nobody jumped up and surrounded him when he strode in like a returning hero. We were playing a game with sticks that Sal had thought up, and we didn't notice him at first. Sal made some boxes on the ground with the sticks and set them apart at different lengths, some closer and some farther apart. Each boy would take it in turns to try to jump through all the boxes without missing one or breaking the sticks apart. I was the tallest and had the longest legs, so I was winning easily, though Crow seemed to take it personally that he was shorter and was trying to make up for it by jumping higher. Charlie struggled the most, being the smallest, and we all cheered when he managed to jump through two boxes in a row. There were three rabbits on the fire for lunch, and the smell of meat cooking mingled with everyone's happy laughter, and it felt like home. And then Peter came, and it was like a cloud settled over the clearing, and that home feeling went away. Smiles faded, even from Nod, who used to worship Peter. But that was when Fogg was still alive, and Peter hadn't helped Nod bury his brother. He hadn't seemed to care at all that Nod's twin was dead, though they'd been on the island the second longest. That took a lot of the shine off Peter for Nod, and Crow did what Nod did, more or less. The shine had come off Peter for Sal and Charlie long before then. So when he looked all around and said, "What's the matter with all of you? Don't you want to know where I've been?" Everyone just stared back at him in silence. "I've been scouting out a new home," Peter said. "I found a much better tree closer to the plains." "There's nothing wrong with this tree," I said. I didn't like to contradict him so sharply, but moving closer to the plains and the many-eyed did not seem like an excellent notion to me. "We've lived in this tree ever since we came here." "But there are so few of us now," Peter said. "And I'm not allowed to get any more boys because you're so boring, Jamie." The other four gave me a curious look at this. I hadn't mentioned to anyone, of course, that I'd argued with Peter about bringing in new boys. I kept my disagreements with Peter to myself if I could. The truth was that Peter could have gone off and collected new boys while he was missing for so many days. There was nothing I could have done about it if I didn't like it. But he hadn't. And then he'd come straight in and complained that I was stopping him from gathering new playmates, and I wondered why. I didn't like the way my thoughts tended. It seemed to me that maybe Peter wanted a clean slate, and that he'd rid himself of all the boys, and that troublesome girl too, by feeding them to the many-eyed. Then he would tell me he had to go off and find new boys because all the others were eaten. "We're not moving closer to the plains," I said. "It's too close to the many-eyed and too close to the pirates." "Well, the pirates have shown they're willing to go anywhere on the island to get at us, so I don't see that counting. I've been surprised at their spirit, you know, Jamie. I didn't think they had it in them, but I guess that old fat captain was holding them back. When they attacked on the mountain, I was really shocked. Though once the shock was over, it was sort of nice to have a fight that wasn't planned by us. Those raids were getting so predictable." Nod moved before I had a chance to do a single thing. One second he was next to me and the next he wasn't. And Peter had no chance to defend himself, none at all.
I always thought of Peter as a smart and capable fighter. But watching Nod pound him, I wondered why I thought this. He always beat the pirates, but then he almost always fought pirates who were older and slower than he. It was me that fought the young ones, the dangerous ones. Peter never scrapped with the other boys at all. He watched at battle, and none of them would dare pick a fight with him because they all adored him. Or rather, they used to. Now most of them were gone, and those who were left didn't adore him any more. Nod had knocked Peter down and was pummeling his face over and over. This was Nod's way, to get on top of the other boy and hit him until he didn't know which way was up. Peter was too astonished to fight back, I think. I dragged Nod off Peter, his fists flailing, his legs kicking out.
"Don't, Jamie, don't. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him."
Peter's nose was bloody. He touched it gingerly, like he couldn't believe he was hurt. I don't think I'd ever seen Peter hurt before. Somehow he never got a scrape, even when we fought the pirates. I might have a list of scars to remember all our battles by, but he didn't. It was strange that I never noticed this in all those years. In my defense, I was usually patching up another boy or myself, and had no time to consider Peter's injuries nor the lack of them.
"Nod," Peter said, and he sounded so hurt that Nod stopped shouting and kicking. "Why did you do that?"
Nod seemed to wither under Peter's sad look, as if he was remembering all the fun they'd once had together. I didn't dare put him down yet, though. If Peter said something thoughtless, he might set Nod off again.
"You didn't... You said... The pirates," Nod said.
"What about the pirates?" Peter asked. I didn't know if he cared so little that he was genuinely puzzled, or if he did the best innocent act in the world.
"The pirates killed Fogg, and you were talking about it like it was fun," Nod said.
His body drooped more after he said this. It seemed to take a lot out of him to admit out loud that Peter wasn't wonderful and perfect. I knew how he felt. It was why I always found myself making excuses for him, defending Peter even when he was awful. That was the power he had over us.
"Well, it is fun, isn't it? Killing the pirates is some of the best fun in the world," Peter said.
"Not when my brother dies," Nod screamed.
It was a good thing that I had a tight grip on Nod, else he would have launched at Peter again. My arm was around his waist and his limbs flailed in front of him, trying to reach Peter. Peter lifted his shoulders.
"Lots of boys die, Nod. It never troubled you before."
"It wasn't my brother," Nod said,
and he let out a long and terrible howl. The storm burst then, all at once. He stopped kicking and punching and suddenly slumped over my arm. I felt his chest heaving and his tears splashing on my skin. Sal was up in an instant, prying me away from Nod and putting her arms around him. Nod collapsed on her, weeping into her shoulder. Peter sniffed at this behavior. He never cried himself, so he didn't see why anyone else should.
"I'm going to the Mermaid Lagoon, since none of you want to see the marvelous tree I've chosen for us," he said.
"Nobody's moving to that tree, Peter," I said.
"Oh, I see," Peter said, his eyes narrowing at me. "I've been gone too long, is it? Now they're Jamie's boys on Jamie's island."
"No," I said. "It's not that way. There's no reason to leave this tree, and it's safer here."
"Well," Peter said, his voice silky and dangerous, "it seems that way. It seems they're all following you now. What's to stop me from collecting a new band of boys from the other place so I'll have some boys to follow me?"
"You promised, Peter," I said. "We made a bargain."
"The bargain was that you would play with me," Peter said.
"And I have. For many days I have been only with you, just the two of us as you wanted, roaming the island," I said. "I kept my word, so you must keep yours."
"If you don't go with me to the Mermaid Lagoon, then you're not keeping your word,"
Peter said. I want to play, and I want somebody to play with. If you won't do it, then I'll have to find another boy.
My eyes met Sal's over Nod's shoulder. She gave a tiny nod to show that she understood. Watch out for Charlie, I told Crow. Crow nodded. He'd been taking in all of this with wide eyes. I wondered what he thought of Peter at that moment. I wondered if Peter realized that he was losing them all because of what he did, not because of what I did. Peter clapped his hands when I joined him. The blood around his nose had dried already. He was lucky, as his nose hadn't swelled at all. He didn't seem to notice that I had no enthusiasm for his game. He was simply happy that I was going with him and that he'd gotten his way. I trudged beside him through the clearing, hearing him chatter happily about this and that and all the things he'd been doing while he was away. How he'd found this new tree, and also how he'd played some tricks on the pirates who were back at camp, so they would think the island was haunted, the way they used to long ago. I don't think you should bother the pirates any more, Peter, I said. Haven't you made them angry enough?
I only made them angry in the first place because of you, Jamie, don't you remember? You killed the Many-Eyed when you weren't supposed to, and then you wanted to make it seem as though the pirates did it. You asked me to draw the pirates out of their camp, and I did, and now you're blaming me because the pirates are mad about it. That's not very fair of you.
I told you to draw them out, not to burn everything down. I was ready to take the blame for the Many-Eyed, but not anything else. It was Peter who made that choice. But it was the boys who paid for it, like they always did.
None of it would have happened except for you, so if all those boys are dead, it's because of you, Jamie.
All those boys. Billy, and Slightly, and Kit, and Jonathan, and Ed, and Terry, and Sam, and Harry, and Dell, and Fogg, and Jack, and Nip, and all the ones before them that I buried in the field, so many that their faces swam together, and their names were one name. They all watched me, and accused me. But it wasn't because it was my fault that they were dead. It was because I didn't stop Peter, because I let Peter live, because I let Peter lie to them, and promise them things that could never be. All children grow up, or they die, or both. All children, except one. Chapter 13. Peter spent more time away from us after that, coming and going as he pleased, and nobody really minded. Things were more comfortable when Peter wasn't around, especially as he was inclined to stare resentfully at Sally when he was in camp. He didn't say anything more about making her go back to the other place. I didn't fool myself that this meant she was allowed to stay. It simply meant that he was trying to come up with a good accident for her, so that he could pretend to boo-hoo when she was gone. When he wanted a companion, he always made me go with him, and every hour I spent with him was a misery. There was nothing on the island that we hadn't done 1,000, 1,000, 1,000 times before. And Peter was unaware, or didn't care, that I didn't want to do it any more. What I wanted was to play quiet games with the others, or tell stories, or just laze about the tree and eat fruit if that was all we wanted. I wanted, finally, for there to be some measure of peace. To not face another day where one of the boys would die, just because Peter couldn't stand to be still. One day, when Peter had gone off on some mission of his own, I asked Crow and Nod to keep an eye on Charlie, and then I asked Sally to take a walk with me. She was drawing pictures in the dirt with a stick, and after I asked her to walk, her face reddened. I just want to show you something important, I said. Her blush made me respond in kind. It was like this with Sally. Everything would be fine with all of us treating her like one of the boys, and then she would say or do something that had me feeling like a fool. Nod watched us curiously as we left. He hadn't been the same since Fogg died. Not as quick to anger, nor as quick to laugh. I'd noticed something else, too.
Nod had gotten taller. I noticed it because he and Crow had been more or less the same size. Then one day they just weren't any more. He'd grown. And so had I. In fact, it had gotten so that I woke up in the morning and didn't recognize my body most days. All my limbs were longer, and my hands and feet seemed like foreign things. When I walked, my ankles got tangled up, and I felt big and slow, though in truth I wasn't that much bigger than I'd been before battle. It was perhaps a thumb length, maybe more, but that length felt like miles when Peter was around, who seemed smaller than ever to me. Had I never really seen how young he was until then? Sal didn't speak as I led her away from the tree. After several minutes, where we both determinedly tried not to look right at each other, she said, "Where are we going?" "To the tunnel that leads to the other place," I said. She tilted her head to one side like she was disappointed in me.
"Sending me back, then? No girls allowed on Peter's Island?"
"No, no," I said hastily. "Not a bit of it. I just remembered what you said on battle day, about not knowing the way back, and I want you to know it." Sal was silent for a minute.
"So I can escape, if I need to."
I nodded. "Yes." She stopped then, and hit me hard in the shoulder.
"And what about you, you fool? Do you think I'll run off and save myself and leave you here with him?"
I stared at her, rubbing my shoulder. "You hit hard," I said.
"For a girl, you mean," she said angrily. "I told you, Jamie, I lived on the streets with boys for 3 years. I can look after myself. I'm not helpless just because I'm a girl. I won't have you treating me like I am. And I don't think you should ask me to run away while you stand and fight. I'm here now, and I'll stand beside you. I won't run."
Nobody had said this to me before. Nobody. If I told the others to run, they ran. If I said I would be a shield between them and the world, then I was. None of them volunteered to stand with me, to take the knocks that I thought were my duty to take.
"Well?" she said.
"All right," I said slowly. "All right. You won't run, and I won't ask you to. But I still want you to know how to get back to the other place. It's not just about you." She wilted a little then.
"Of course. Charlie.
I know he doesn't mean as much to you as he does to me," I started.
"Don't think you can decide for me what's in my heart," she snapped. "I love Charlie as much as you do."
"All right," I said again, not knowing what else to say. I felt as though I were navigating some strange and undiscovered country, one where perils lurked around every bend. Girls might not be trouble the way Peter thought, but they certainly were confusing. I took Sally off the main path and into a patch of forest tucked in the border between the swamp and the mountains. It wasn't that far from the tree, but the course was confusing if you didn't know where you were going. I showed her all the things I used to stay on track. A tree marked with an X in the bark, a knife mark scratched on a boulder, a little stream that bubbled near the entry to the tunnel to the other place. It looked just like a rabbit hole, as it did on the other side. It was tucked underneath a tree, between two knotted tree roots. There was nothing to show that it was magic, or that it would take you away from the island entirely. For the first time, I wondered what would happen if the tunnel was blocked. Would you be able to dig out all the way to the other place at the end? Or would the magic be broken forever? Strange that we'd never thought of this, or worried about it. We could have been trapped in the other place if that happened. There was something about Peter, his complete surety that things would always work the way he wanted them to. When he said we could go to the other place and return to the island, we believed him. I'd never troubled myself thinking that the magic might go away. Now I worried about exactly such a thing. What if I told Sally and Charlie to run for the tunnel, and when they got there, The tunnel wouldn't take them back because it was blocked or broken. Worse, what if the tunnel only took you to the other place if Peter was with you? I'd never tried to go through on my own, and I was certain none of the boys ever had either. What if it was Peter who made the magic? She shook her head. I never would have found this again. It was dark, and I was so excited, and also the tunnel seemed so long. It does, that first time, I said. After that it goes quicker. Peter's head popped out like a jack-in-the-box, telling me to come on, come on. There were adventures to be had. He disappeared again, and I was afraid to stand out in the dark on my own, out under this tree. I didn't know how to get back home, and the tree seemed huge and frightening, like a dangerous thing that would reach down with its branches and grab me and hold me too tight. I ran to the hole and peered in, and didn't see Peter. So I called his name and heard him answer, "Come on, Jamie!" Though the answer seemed far away. He was going away from me, and then I'd be all alone. I put my feet into the opening, and after a second I pushed off and followed Peter down into the hole. There was a long drop that I didn't expect, and I tumbled to the bottom, getting dirt in my eyes and mouth and nose. Peter laughed, but it wasn't a mean laugh, and he picked me up and dusted me off, and his eyes seemed to glow in the darkness. "It's not far now," he said, and he took my hand. It was farther than I thought it would be, so long in the dark, and I would have been afraid, except that Peter never let go of my hand. Did you ever wonder, Jamie, how Peter found this island in the first place? Sal's words startled me out of the memory. I shrugged. I never asked. I suppose I always thought that he found the hole by accident when he was just exploring in the other place. I didn't mention my worry that the path only worked because of Peter. I decided that I would explore on my own another day, when Peter was away somewhere, and make sure that you could cross to the other place if he wasn't with you. "I wonder," Sal said, and she looked thoughtful. "Wonder what?" I asked. "I wonder if he's not actually from the other place," Sal said. "If he's from the island and he found the path to the other place from here." "How could he be from the island?" I asked. "Did he sprout out of the ground like a mushroom? Where are his parents?" Sal shook her head. "I don't know. But he's not like other boys. There's something different about him." I didn't say anything to this. There was something different about Peter. The way he knew things about the island. The way he sometimes seemed like he was of the island. That he could fly. None of the rest of us could fly. I thought that this was because he'd been there for so long. But maybe Sal was right. Maybe the reason why Peter was so dismissive of mothers was because he'd never had one. Maybe he just appeared on the island one day, unfolding out of the grass just as he was, an 11-year-old boy forever. But no, that was silly. Even Peter couldn't have come from nothing. He had to have been born somewhere. I asked Sal to point out all the markers to me on the way back to the tree so I could be sure that she understood where she was to go. She huffed out a sigh. "I told you I'm not stupid, Jamie. There's no need to test me. I just want to make sure you won't get lost," I said. "It's easy to get lost here." If she and Charlie were on their own and got turned around in the dark, they could very easily end up near the crocodile pond. Sal might think I was being ridiculous, but then she hadn't been on the island when Peter told the story of the crocodile and the duckling. She didn't worry about Charlie being dragged underneath the water of the pond by sharp, sharp teeth. Still, she passed my test, as she called it, and found her way back to the main path without any prompting from me. When we reached it, she crossed her arms and looked up at me. "Happy now?" Then she frowned. "Are you taller? I thought I was nearly as tall as you." "You did well," I said, avoiding her question. I glanced back over my shoulder in the direction of the tunnel.
Perhaps we should practice again from this side, just to make sure.
I'm not doing it again. You'll simply have to trust me, she said impatiently. Jamie, you didn't answer me. Are you taller?
This was the other quality that made Sal different from all the other boys. She couldn't be distracted by anything. If she asked you a question and you didn't answer, then she would ask that question again and again until you did. Yes, I said, and hoped that would be enough. Sal would never take a one-word answer. Are you... she began. Then she swallowed before going on, her voice hushed, like she was afraid the island itself would hear and tell Peter.
Are you growing up?
Her words seemed to hang between us on the shimmering air, insects flying between them without any notion of how dangerous that question could be. It crashed over me all at once, the truth I'd been pretending wasn't there. I was growing up. I was growing up, and I was so afraid. I turned away from Sally, choking on the answer. She wouldn't let me turn, wouldn't let me cry alone in shame, wouldn't leave me. Sally would never leave me alone. She put her arms around me, and I covered my face in my hands and sobbed because I was afraid. For so long I'd run free with the knowledge that I would never grow up, that I would only die if I got on the wrong end of a pirate's sword. Even then, that sort of death had seemed another adventure at first, when everything on the island was new. It was heroic and also somehow not real, that I might be slashed by a pirate and fall to the ground, but Peter would find me and wake me up later. There were many years when the death of the other boys that we brought here didn't trouble me, because I knew that at least I would always go on. Peter had promised me, and so I would live forever. It was a very long time before I stopped believing in Peter's promises. Now the island was fading for me, losing its magic, and I would grow old and one day I would die for certain. And I thought it wasn't just because Peter didn't care about the boys, or that he kept secrets. It was because I didn't love him anymore the way that I used to do, when we were both small, and he was my best friend in all the world.
I'm glad, she said fiercely. I'm glad because I'm going to grow up, and I want you to grow up with me.
I scrubbed at my eyes then, and looked at her. Her face was so close to mine, I could smell her hair, flowery and sweet, because Sal took baths even when the rest of us didn't. Her eyes were bluer than they'd ever been, dark and full of some promise that I didn't really understand.
"Only, Jamie, you have to not grow up too fast," she said primly. "Because I'm 13, and I think right now you're about the size of a 14-year-old, and that's happened very fast, so you can't get much bigger now, for if you do, then you'll be too far ahead of me."
I knew then that when I stopped loving Peter, my heart looked for other things, and Sal was filling up all the space that Peter used to take there. She pressed her lips against my cheek, something I'd seen now and then in the other place. It was called a kiss, I remembered. A kiss can be made of magic too. I'd never known that. She blushed again when I stared as she pulled back, but she didn't look away. Sal didn't hide. She always looked at you directly and made you meet her. "I'll grow up with you," I said, and took her hand. It was different from holding Charlie's hand or Peter pulling me along to a new adventure. Her fingers twined into mine and I held it over my heart so I could show her all the things that I didn't know how to say. Then I kissed her cheek very fast and let go of her hand and ran away. And she ran after me, laughing, and all of the world seemed to rise up laughing with her. She had the most wonderful laugh that you ever heard, like silver music that coursed through your blood. We were still children,
for all that we thought we weren't. We were in that in-between place, the twilight between childish things and grown-up things. Childhood still held out a friendly hand to us, if we wanted to go back to it, while the unexplored country was ahead, beckoning us to come there and see what new pleasures were to be found. I didn't really understand what that country meant. Not really. It had been so long since I'd been near a grown-up who wasn't a pirate. To me, pirates were not unlike children themselves, only in bigger bodies. They did as they pleased, or so it seemed to me. And they spent as much time on the island as we boys did. And their lives had just as much blood and adventuring as ours. The country that called to me now was one I barely remembered. One in which well-dressed husbands and wives talked quietly over supper tables. I remember, suddenly, seeing just such a pair when I pressed my face against the window of a public house. I didn't remember why I was there, or how old I might have been, or where my own parents were. I only remembered being cold and hungry and seeing them there, warm and clean and well-fed. "Sal," I said, "when we grow up, we will have a very large house." "Of course," she said, "for all the boys." I nodded, pleased that she understood. For when Sal and I left the island to grow up, of course we would take Charlie and Nod and Crow with us. I could never leave them behind with Peter. The thought of Peter all alone on the island with no companions to play with didn't make me as sad as it ought to. I felt a little thrill of pleasure that he would have no one to push or pull or feed to the maw of the island when he was bored. "When will we leave?" Sal asked. I explained to her that I wanted to test the tunnel before we tried to cross it without Peter. She agreed that it was a possibility that the crossing might only be there if he was. She pursed her lips. "I don't like the idea of you trying on your own." "It'll be safer and quicker with just one," I said. "And once I'm sure we can make it through to the other place, then we can leave as soon as Peter's gone off on one of his trips."
"Why not just leave when he's there?" she asked.
"You should look him in the eye and tell him that you're going, not sneak away like a coward." That stung. I wasn't a coward. I'd never been a coward. "It's not about cowardice," I said. "It's about safety. You don't know Peter. You think that you know him, but I've been his companion for longer than you can understand. Peter might let all of you go, though I can't be certain of that, but he won't let me go. I think Peter would rather kill me himself than see me leave. More than that, he'd try to kill the others if he thought it would make me stay. In his Peter boy logic, he would think that if only he got rid of what distracted me, then I would be happy to be with him instead. But if I said that out loud, Sal would only tell me that I was trying to protect her when she didn't need protecting."
"You're afraid to fight him?" she asked, peering at me closely. "I can't believe that."
"Of course not," I said.
"Then this is about me or Charlie or some other such thing," Sal said.
It cut me. It really did. The way she just seemed to know everything. "Can't you let me look after you?" I said. "If we're together, then that means we take care of each other."
"Yes, that means I look after you too and not allow you to act foolish."
"It's not foolish to keep you away from Peter's anger," I said. "You've never seen it."
"I saw him at the battle arena," she said.
"That's not anger," I said. Why would she not comprehend? Everything about this plan was much more dangerous than she thought it was. If Peter caught us... "Please," I said. "Please don't make me put you or Charlie or Nod or Crow at risk just because it offends your sense of honesty. You can be as honest and forthright as you like, Sal, but you should know that Peter won't be. This is his island. He'll do anything to keep it exactly as he wants it." There must have finally been something in my face or voice that convinced her, for she gave a reluctant nod.
"All right," she said. "We'll do it your way."
"And don't mention anything to the others yet," I said. "Not until it's time to go."
Yes,
she said. And then her hand came up suddenly, blocking her eyes.
What's the matter?
I said.
Something bright, she said,
lowering her hand and pointing behind me.
Like a flash.
I twisted around, looking for what had startled her, but I didn't see anything. I thought I heard a faint tinkling sound on the wind. Where did it come from? I asked, suddenly worried that pirates might be roaming the forest searching for us. The flash might have been the sun off a blade, and the tinkling the sound of buckles jingling as they walked. She showed me, and we carefully explored all around, checking for any sign of pirates. Footprints, broken brush, the smell of rum that they left behind them in a cloud. After I assured myself that there was nothing to find, we agreed to go back. It must have been a bird, I said.
What sort of bird flashes in the sun? She asked.
You'd be surprised, I said. Some of the birds here have feathers so white that they shine. You haven't seen all of the islands, Sal. I have. She would have liked to argue about this, I thought. Except there was no denying that on this one subject alone, I was more knowledgeable than she. The only person in the world who knew the island better was Peter. I returned to camp feeling more light-hearted and hopeful than I'd felt in a long time. I even smiled at Peter when I saw him sitting at the fire with the other three. Peter took that grin in stride, but Nod looked sharply from Sally to me and back again, which made my smile fade. I wondered how much he could see there, and how much he understood. Charlie was sitting beside Peter, which surprised me very much. He was holding a little piece of carved wood in his hand, and I recognized the thing Peter had been whittling the day I killed the Many-Eyed. That day seemed so long ago, a lifetime ago, so very many boys ago, when they were all still alive. "What's that?" I asked. Charlie's eyes shone as he held up the wood.
Peter made me a toy. Look, he said it's a little fairy to keep me safe.
He handed the toy to me and I inspected it.
The carving was that of a very tiny girl with wings. Somehow, Peter had managed to make the wings appear gossamer and light, carving little lace patterns there. Her hair was long and curled past her shoulders, and she wore a dress made out of leaves.
Her feet were small and bare. The face was full of mischief and delight, a face that drew you, invited you. It was very finely done, so fine that it seemed that the girl might suddenly fly away from my hand.
"A fairy, eh?" I asked, looking at Peter.
"Oh, yes," Peter said. "I know all about fairies. I met them in the gardens in the other place." This was the first I'd heard of such a thing. The most I knew of fairies were the stories that other boys told when they came to the island, stories about creatures that granted wishes or stole a child away from its parents and left a changeling in its place.
"When did you ever meet the fairies?" I asked.
"Oh, it was long before I met you, Jamie," Peter said. I could always tell when he was lying. His eyes went from one side to another, looking everywhere but directly at me. "Peter told me that if you find a fairy and make a wish, it will give you whatever you want," Charlie said excitedly.
"I wish I might find a fairy."
"And what would you wish for?" Peter asked. Charlie fingered the fairy toy's delicate wings. "I'd wish I could fly, just like them. Wouldn't it be wonderful? To soar on the air above everything." Peter smiled. It was the smile of a crocodile.
"Yes,"
he said. "Wouldn't it be?" Chapter 14. Peter stayed in the camp for 8 days in a row after that. I would have snuck off to check the tunnel during that time, except that he was suddenly showing an unnerving interest in Charlie. Wherever Peter went, and whatever he did, suddenly it just wouldn't do unless Charlie was by his side. Charlie might have been reluctant, except that Peter had softened him with the gift of the toy.
Now the smaller boy was convinced that Peter liked him best in all the world. Charlie began to copy Peter's walk, a little rooster swagger, and stopped wearing his shoes from the other place because Peter went barefoot. If Peter thought that sunshine was wonderful, then Charlie did too. If Peter thought that hunting was boring, then Charlie did too. He would no longer help around camp because Peter never would. More than once, I caught the two of them whispering to each other and laughing at the rest of us. Peter was making Charlie a smaller version of himself, full of fun and heartless with it. I knew that Peter was up to something, that he wasn't really interested in Charlie at all. Because of this, I was afraid to leave Charlie alone with Peter for even a few minutes. That meant that when Peter took Charlie off to swim or climb or what have you, I always followed along and the others went because I did. Peter was happy because he had all his boys and one girl around him all the time, and everyone was doing exactly as he wished without arguing about it. Sometimes Sally would look at me, and that look would say that I needed to go and scout out the tunnel so that we could leave. I knew, and she knew, that leaving was the only possible way we could save Charlie. But I was afraid that the moment I left, Peter would see his chance. If I looked away for even a breath, then Peter would put a knife in Charlie's heart, and that would be as good as putting one in mine. So I stayed in that in-between place, between the future with Sally and the past with Peter, because I didn't know how to set us all free without losing Charlie. Finally, one evening, Sally pulled me aside while the others were distracted by Peter capering and tumbling about the clearing. Charlie was laughing like he'd never seen anything so funny in all his life. Peter would turn on his hands and then spring to his feet again, pulling faces and making ridiculous noises that had Charlie howling. Crow was laughing too, and even Nod was smiling as though he wanted to scowl but couldn't quite do it. "You have to go tomorrow," she whispered. I looked from her to Charlie, who had fallen under Peter's spell. "We've got to leave before Charlie's in love with him any more than he already is," Sally said. "He won't even look at you any more." It was true. Far from being my trailing little duckling, Charlie now disdained me as boring, the way that Peter often did. "If you don't go in the morning, then I will," Sally said. I thought this was unfair in the extreme. She was asking me to choose between keeping Charlie safe and letting her do something potentially dangerous. "I'll watch out for Charlie," she said. "You have to trust me." Peter picked Charlie up, turning him upside down and making him laugh even harder. Charlie was so happy. But Peter, I could see Peter's eyes. And he was not. He was plotting. That night I stayed awake while the others dropped off to sleep. Even Peter closed his eyes and slept, his arm thrown over Charlie like the smaller boy was a possession that he wouldn't share. I knew I wouldn't have a better chance than that. Out into the night I went, shivering in the cool air. We never got a proper winter on the island, of course, but it was that time of year when the wind blew a little colder and the sun lowered just a little earlier. The unchanging moon was hidden by clouds. I thought I smelled the scent of rain. All around me the brush rustled as small animals darted away from my footsteps. I ran fast and quiet, wanting to reach the tunnel quickly. I'd know as soon as I entered it whether the passage to the other place was even possible without Peter. If passage was possible, I would only go as far as the tree at the opposite end. From the tree you could see the lights of the city Peter had taken me from all those years ago, the city that seemed to grow and stretch, reaching its fingers out to the tree that had once been miles from its center. If I saw the city, I would know, and I'd be able to return to our tree just as quickly. I was terrified that Peter would wake up and find me gone and come looking for me. He seemed to be able to sniff you out like an animal if he wanted to find you. I didn't know what lie I might tell him if he did follow me. He would never believe that I was going to the other place to find new boys to play with. I turned off the path, finding my way despite the lack of moonlight.
I'd walked that stretch so many times I was certain I could find it in my sleep. And yet when I reached the place where the tree was supposed to be, I thought I'd made a mistake. Because the tree wasn't there. It was dark, but even with the dark, I should have been able to see the shape of the tree against the sky. The stream that was supposed to bubble nearby was silent, and the ground underfoot was strangely squashy, like the land near the marsh. I must have walked the wrong way in the dark, and I imagined how Sal would laugh at this after my insistence that she test her memory of the path. Feeling foolish, I started back to retrace my steps, when the clouds parted, and the moon revealed what had been hidden a moment before. The tree had been cut down. In truth, it looked as though it had somehow been torn down. The break in the trunk was less like an axe chopping and more like it was ripped away by an angry giant. If I'd walked even a few steps farther, I would have bumped into it, for it blocked the way completely. It partially dammed up the flow of the little stream which had caused the water to seep around it and soak the grass. My heart pounded as I approached the broken trunk. Just because the tree was gone didn't mean that the tunnel was gone. Why should the tree falling affect it? The roots were still in place. The roots were there, but these had definitely been cut by something that bit sharp and deep. And every place the roots were sliced, there was something filling those cuts. Something dark and sticky that looked like blood. I touched it and it clung to my fingers. And when I sniffed it, the stuff smelled like blood too. The hole between the roots was gone. It wasn't just filled in. It was entirely gone, as if it had never been. There was grass growing over the place where it used to be. Peter, I breathed and fell to my knees. Somehow, Peter had discovered our plan, mine and Sal's. Had he been in the woods that day? Had he seen Sal kiss me? Heard us talk about leaving the island? It would explain the flash that Sal saw, and why there had been no sign of anybody nearby. Peter knew how to cover his tracks. Peter had snuck away from the tree, probably in the night when we all slept, and destroyed the gate back to the other place so that we could never, ever leave. It was Peter's island, and we were now his prisoners. No, I said, and stood up again. I was not going to stay there. The island was surrounded by water. We could make a boat and sail away. We could steal a boat from the pirates. They had those rowboats that they used to come ashore. It would be hard going on the ocean in a boat that small, but we might find a ship of friendly folk who would take us aboard. And if we didn't, well, anything, even dying at sea, was preferable to staying there one more moment in the company of a mad child who would jail us on his island paradise. If Peter tried to stop us, tried to hurt any of the others, I would kill him. I knew then that I could do it. For a long time the memory of our former happiness had stopped me. But no more. Peter wasn't my brother. He was my enemy. I knew what to do with an enemy. My dagger was in my hand, and I ran. I wasn't away from the tree that long, but it was long enough. When I reached the clearing, I don't know what I intended to do, to wake Peter and make him fight me, or to slit his throat in his sleep. I just knew that I wanted to know his blood, to see his green eyes dull, to end his power over me forever. I could hardly remember why his smile had once meant so much to me. There was only one smile I wanted from him then, a long, thin, red one, where a smile should not be. A flash of silver in the darkness. What have you done? Small hands, covered in blood. The dream memories were in my way. I shook them off, entered the tree, ready to confront Peter and end it all forever. He was gone, and so was Charlie. No,
I said, and kicked the skins they'd been sleeping on. No, 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 no! Sal and Crow and Nod sat up,